Okay, it's 6 o'clock. I'm going to call the meeting to order. We have a full house tonight. Billy Townsend, Chad Wade, James Davies, Caleb Benning, Steve Miller, and myself, Maggie Elliott. There's no one in from the public for any public discussion, so we'll go right to the zoning code text amendment, case number REZ25-0015. Consideration of amendments to Title 14, zoning to ensure compliance with changes in state law related to home occupations, consumer fireworks, sales, exterior building materials, variances, and accessory dwelling units. Lisa, you're welcome.
Hi.
Thank you for leading us tonight.
My name is Lisa Schroer, and I'm a planner in Neighborhood and Development Services. So staff regularly updates the city zoning code to reflect changing conditions and new legal requirements that come online. Over the last few years, there have been a handful of changes at the state level that now preempt certain areas of local zoning authority. Estate preemption is when state law limits or overrides a city's ability to regulate certain issues locally. So when this happens, we have to update our zoning code to ensure that we comply with state law. All of the text amendments today stem from these five state laws. First, we have House File 2431, which is related to home occupations. Second, we have Senate File 2285, which is related to the sale of consumer fireworks. Third, House File 2388, which is related to our exterior building material requirements. We also have House File 652 related to area variances. And then finally, Senate File 592 from earlier this year that's related to accessory dwelling units. So before I get into the details on these, I just wanted to note how we approach these types of text amendments. So we try to do as little change as possible to make sure that we comply with state law, but also preserve local oversight when possible. So I'll first go over the home occupations. So this law limits the ability of cities to regulate home-based businesses. And under this law, cities must allow home occupations in residential zones. The law also doesn't allow cities to, require a permit for home occupations that have no impact. And then also, under this law, we're still able to impose regulations on home occupations that are necessary to protect public health and safety, welfare, or transportation impacts on the surrounding neighborhood. So there's some guardrails here. So our proposed text amendments, first we reorganize home occupations into three categories, type A, type B, type C. Currently, there are only two types, type A and type B. Currently, we require a permit for type B. However, our amendments transfer that permit requirement just to type C home occupations, which are home occupations where the use generates on-street parking. We also remove a couple of requirements. First, only one non-resident employee may be approved for home occupation use. And we also remove the requirement that non-resident employees not be permitted for home occupations that are medical offices. The amendments also expand where home occupations may occur on the property. Currently, they are allowed within the dwelling or an accessory structure. Our new amendments also allow them to be in the side or rear yard. We also have updated the list of prohibited home occupations. We add some new restrictions related to hazardous materials, emissions, and right-of-way impacts. And then we removed two currently prohibited home occupations from the list, so commercial recreation uses and eating establishments. We also increased the maximum allowable size for home occupations. So home occupations can now be 50% of the principal dwelling's floor area, regardless of whether the use is in the dwelling, the yard, or the accessory building. And then we also remove the commercial activity clause, which states that no commodities may be sold on the premises except for those produced on the premises or those associated with the home occupation. Lastly, we clarify there's a 10 client per day rule that applies to Type B currently. We expand this so that it also applies to Type C home occupations. And then finally, we add an additional off-site impact rule. So if a portion of the home occupation is in the front yard, we require that the activity be screened from view. Next, we'll move into Senate File 2285 on consumer fireworks sales. Under this law, cities are not able to regulate or prohibit the sale of consumer fireworks within commercial or industrial zones. So under this rule, zoning restrictions on the sale of fireworks in commercial zones, which we currently do, is no longer enforceable. And under this law, the sales are still permitted to the statewide sales period. For permanent structures, this is June 1st through July 8th. And November 10th through January 3rd. And for temporary structures, those dates are June 13th to July 8th. So just a couple changes that we made. First, we expand the zones in which consumer fireworks sales are permitted to be in both commercial and industrial zones. Again, currently, they're only allowed in industrial zones. And then we also, when it comes to temporary sales, we allow consumer fireworks in commercial zones, consistent with existing allowances for industrial zones. Our next law is House File 2388, which is exterior design materials for residential buildings. This law limits our ability to regulate exterior design standards for smaller residential developments. The law prohibits us from regulating specific exterior building materials, colors, and architectural styles for residential structures that have 12 or fewer dwelling units. And I also want to note, we're still, under this law, we're still able to regulate exterior materials and design elements in our special zoning districts, such as riverfront crossings, and also in historic and conservation district overlays. So we've updated our code. The amendments specify that all trim and facade requirements related to exterior materials only apply to residential buildings that have more than 12 units. We also limit the applicability of existing material requirements that we have for the Central Planning District and PRM zone so that they only apply to residential buildings that have more than 12 units. And then lastly, we retain the ability to regulate exterior materials in our overlay districts and special zoning districts. So next we have House File 652 related to area variances. This law expands the authority of local boards of adjustment to grant area variances in addition to the use variances that they already grant. Area variances are, it's pretty much anything related to area, dimensional, or other numerical limitation that's in our zoning code. So this could be anything from minimum lot size to the height of a building. Last week we had a rear setback case. And also for an area variance, this new practical difficulty standard must be met. So our amendments first expand the basis for granting variances to include both undue hardship, which is for use variances, and then practical difficulties, which is for area variances. We also remove a prohibition on granting variances that would allow uses not permitted in the underlying zone, as required by state law. The amendments also add separate definitions for use variances and area variances. Currently, we just have one definition that's called the variance. So our area variance definition is a means of granting a property owner relief from certain provisions of this title related to area, dimensional, or other numerical limitations, where owing to special conditions, a literal enforcement of the title will result in practical difficulties, and so that the spirit of this title shall be observed and substantial justice done. Our use variance, this is our previous just variance definition, and it's a means of granting property owner relief from certain provisions of this title, where owing to special conditions, a literal enforcement of the provisions of this title will result in unnecessary hardship, and so that the spirit of this title shall be observed and substantial justice done. We've also added approval criteria for area variances that the Board of Adjustment uses. First, the Board must find that the proposed variance will not be contrary to the public interest. Second, owing to special conditions, a literal enforcement of the code would result in practical difficulties. Third, the practical difficulties must be unique to the property and not self-created. Fourth, the spirit of the zoning code provision shall be observed. And lastly, the Board must find that granting the variance will not significantly alter the essential character of the neighborhood. And that brings us to our last preemption, which is Senate File 592 on our accessory dwelling unit standards. So under this law, cities are required to allow at least one ADU on the same lot as a single family residence, as defined by state code. It also prohibits cities from imposing certain local restrictions that act as a barrier to the construction of one ADU. Examples of restrictions could be owner occupancy mandates, parking requirements, size limitations, or design standards. Under this law, ADUs may not be regulated under accessory use standards if those standards are more restrictive than the standards that apply to a single-family dwelling. And then finally, ADUs must also be approved without discretionary review. So we currently use discretionary review with our Historic Preservation Commission. I also want to note some previous ADU-related code amendments. In 2023, the city adopted a set of zoning amendments aimed at increasing housing choice and expanding the variety of housing types. As part of this effort, the city streamlined the process for developing ADUs by removing minimum parking requirements, allowing ADUs to be developed with attached single-family homes and duplexes, and adjusting side standards to increase flexibility. So the Senate File 592 works to build upon these previous efforts. Here are code changes. So first, we note that ADUs are allowed on the same lot as a single family residence as defined by state code, regardless of the underlying zoning district. Second, we clarify that per state law, a single family residence may include duplexes or townhomes. We also remove the current owner occupancy requirement for properties that contain an ADU. And we also ensure that one ADU is permitted per lot by eliminating our minimum lot size and area per unit requirements. We also remove existing design requirements that mandate attached ADU appearance must visually match the principal dwelling. We also, the amendments adjust size requirements for an ADU so that it won't exceed 1,000 square feet or 50% of the single family residence floor area, whichever is larger. We also clarify the relationship between ADUs and accessory use standards. ADUs cannot be held to more restrictive accessory use regulation than single-family dwellings. So we have different standards for height setbacks, lot coverage. We have a set of those for principal dwelling units and accessory structures. So under this law, we need to treat the ADU as a single family when those standards are, when the accessory standards are more restrictive than the principal dwelling standards. And then lastly, we add a definition for single-family residence. This comes from the state code, and it's a single-family residence means a structure maintained and used as a single dwelling unit, notwithstanding that a dwelling unit shares one or more walls with another dwelling unit. It is a single-family residence if it has direct access to a street or thoroughfare and shares neither heating facilities, hot water equipment, nor any other essential facility or service with another dwelling unit if full utility access that includes a separate metering system for billing purposes can be provided to the accessory dwelling unit. And with that, staff recommend approval of REZ25-0015, which are amendments to Title 14 to ensure compliance with changes in state law related to home occupations, consumer fireworks sales, exterior building materials, variances, and accessory dwelling units. Here's our anticipated timeline. So January 6th, we're anticipating the public hearing will be set. And then January 20th, the public hearing will be the public hearing and also the first consideration. And with that, I'll pass it back to the chair.
I'll start with the questions. In the amendments, I understood that the review and approval in a historic preservation district eliminated approval by the commission, Historic Preservation Commission, but it did allow an administrative historic review process. So what will that look like, and what's the how will that make a difference?
I can take that one. So currently, new construction in a historic district or a conservation district requires review and approval by the Historic Preservation Commission. Our understanding of the law is that staff can still review the ADUs according to our historic preservation guidelines and approve the new construction or the ADU, but it can't go to a body like the Board of Adjustment or to the Historic Preservation Commission where there's some discretion involved. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Is there recourse for the staff to say no to something because it doesn't abide by?
Yeah, I mean, that is a situation that we're going to have to deal with if it comes to that. We haven't gotten to that point yet. We've had ADUs in historic districts and haven't had any issues. But
so my other question was, how does this affect an area like the North Side? The changes, how will that affect the North Side? Or, you know, areas like Longfellow?
Yeah, because they're in historic districts.
Yeah.
I mean, right now those areas already allow ADUs. The only difference is that the approval will not go to the Historic Preservation Commission. The approval will come from staff.
And the other change, it seems to me, in those areas will be the owner-occupied requirement.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. And that's citywide. Yeah, everywhere.
Okay. My other question is kind of just if I understand this right, and the home occupations section, what are the implications of that? I have no idea how many home occupation, you know, how much that occurs, or will this be a big change?
I don't think it'll be a big change. I can't tell you how many home occupations permits we issue every year. I think the biggest difference is that you can have the use in a yard but it has to be screened. I mean, the idea of the no impact is that it can't generate traffic or on-street parking, but also that it's not really visible by neighbors. So I don't think the intent of the state law is they want to create impacts. I think the idea is we have a lot of people, creative people, artists, other people who want to, you know, do things in their home and run a business in their home. So let's be more flexible to allow that.
One of the things that under that area, it said the right-of-way impact. What does that mean?
It's on-street parking.
Parking. Okay. Yeah. All right. All right. Does anybody else have questions?
I have the same area where they're now requiring eating establishments. So
allowing.
To what extent?
Yeah, we took that. That would be a restaurant or a cafe or something like that. It was under the list of prohibited businesses, and with the new state law, we didn't think we could prohibit it. They may still require a permit, but there are examples of people who have essentially a restaurant in their home. Maybe they have capacity for like four people, and four people come over and they make a dinner, and this happens, I don't know if this happens in Iowa City, but I've heard of it happening where you can make a reservation to go to someone's house in other communities. So we didn't feel like we could prohibit it with the state law change.
So would they have to go through all the licensing processes
If it was a no-impact restaurant, if it was determined to be no impact, then they wouldn't need a permit from us.
Okay. That was a type C. And type C does?
Type C does. So if there was some sort of impact from this theoretical restaurant, then they would need a permit from us.
Is impact defined anywhere specifically?
Yeah,
it's like the things Lisa talked about, like generating traffic. The screening, like not being visible from the right of way and neighboring properties. But the main thing is the traffic and.
Right. And there's the 10 customer a day rule.
Yeah.
That would apply.
Yeah.
So a theoretical restaurant could not have more than 10 without being something besides a home occupancy.
Yeah. That yes.
Okay.
And how is that moderated? I mean, is that just a neighbor calling in a complaint?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have to apply and tell the city that this is their estimated number of clients per day.
Is that 10 number, is that included in the state law, or is that something we just felt to include?
That was an existing requirement that we had for type B.
Okay.
Yeah.
The other part of that, sticking with the same section, the sale of anything, you've taken out the provision where there were no commodities can be sold on the premise except for those produced on the premise. And so now that's removed. So they can sell anything out of their home?
Yeah, they can, yes. As long as it's not a hazardous material or creating some sort of, I mean,
so they, in essence,
it can't be the things that Lisa listed that were prohibited.
They could have a gun shop as long as they didn't have the ammunition.
I think they can have a gun shop, yes. And I think there's been examples of that in other local jurisdictions.
Wow. Okay.
Can I ask, two businesses I think of. One is like they do in-home baking. And they have like the pantry outside. I know there's a few of those like in the area. What impact does this have on that type of business other than potentially the screening requirement? Because usually they have a outside pantry.
Yeah, if they're existing, it won't have any impact because our rules prior to this state law were more restrictive.
Okay, so this frees it up. And then I can think of a situation last year, a roofing company that had a lot of vehicles on their property, outside their property, but not a lot of employees, like maybe going in and out other than maybe parking, over on Keswick last year. And I know it became a situation. So in that type of business, does this have any impact, either more restrictive or less restrictive?
I guess I'm not familiar with that, so I don't know if I can speak to that.
Okay. The situation was, it was a roofing company, took up a lot of on-street parking, not a lot of customer activity because they were going to a job site. However, it was impacting the neighbors and then also city vehicle access for like snow removal and so mm-hmm. on. So might be more of a parking streets issue.
Yeah. I mean, if the idea is if you're generating on street parking, it would have an impact. The way that the rules are structured is we would determine how much parking does the single family home need, how much parking does the home occupation use need based on the type of use that it is. And if they can provide those spaces on site, there's no impact. But if they can't, they don't have to actually provide the parking, but if they have those spaces on site, then it's no impact. If they don't have those spaces, then there's an impact. Does that make sense? So if they're, it sounds like this use was probably in the realm of needing a permit.
Okay. And the other one was ADUs, and you already answered that, so okay. I appreciate it.
I'm just curious if it's determined that the home occupation does have impact, what's the process then? Or is it just no longer?
Then they have to get a permit. Unless it's a prohibited business that's not like an adult business or something like that.
Is the process for getting a permit?
It just goes through our colleague, Cynthia, who handles all home-based occupation permits.
And if it's, so like if it's determined that like this, whatever, an office or a small little restaurant, cafe or something wants, or has, like maybe they have no parking on site or something. So it, even if it's a one or two cars, impact of on-street parking is just, goes through and gets a permit, and is there like a limit of how much impact before they would deny the permit or anything, or is it just kind of like a judgment call?
Well, the clients, if it's, it can't be more than 10, mm-hmm. right? So that is one limit. Yeah.
Okay. Just curious.
Any further questions?
On that area or on all of it?
All of it.
Okay, ADUs. You're taking out the requirement that the ADU has to more or less mimic the original unit, the residence, and now that's been taken out. Are there any controls on the design of these ADUs?
No, we cannot regulate that.
So they could do a tent in the back.
And they cannot do a tent. They cannot do a tent. Well, I mean, that is not a structure.
Building code.
Yeah, well... Or an igloo. I'm just trying to see, is there something that's going to give some kind of regulations on what they can put?
I mean, it still needs to meet our building code. So they're going to have walls, and they're going to have heating and electrical.
But the design is...
We can't say it has to have the same siding, or it has to be the same architecture, or anything like that. We can only regulate the size of it.
Okay.
Did I misunderstand? In historic overlay, does it still fall under historic, not under commission review, but under staff review?
Staff review, yeah.
In that case, would it still have to follow historic?
Yes, we would. That is true. That's a good point. So if it's in a historic district, we would still be looking at our guidelines.
Okay.
And it would regulate things like the architecture and the siding and stuff like that, yeah.
But I thought you took that out.
She's talking about historic districts.
Only for historic districts. Would that be allowed?
Okay.
And the historic commission cannot weigh in. It's just staff.
That's correct.
And they can even put an ADU behind a townhouse.
Yes.
Okay.
Any further questions? You good?
So, yeah.
All right. We have no public for public input. Request a motion for approval. And the
I move to approve.
Second.
You want to have anything to say? No. No. All approve. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Passes unanimously.
I didn't do anything. I'm still thinking. I'm going to put a no on it.
Okay. We have one no. Townsend.
Billy, do you want to speak to your concerns?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. First, in a residential area, an eating establishment in someone's home, to me, seems a bit far-fetched. If you have a home in a residential area, you expect it to be that, a residential area, not a commercial area. So in my opinion, I think we've gone a step too far. And then when you have no regulations on the ADUs except for the Historical Society properties, then you're opening your neighborhood to whatever people want. I mean, I'm even looking at the solar panels that people are putting in their backyard. Next door to us, it's a monstrosity. First you look out and there's pretty trees, and the next you're looking at solar panels. So if we're just removing all of the regulations that kept our neighborhoods the way they should be when you're looking at a residential area, then I think we're opening ourselves to problems. Iowa City has been such a beautiful little town for so long. I've been here almost 40 years, and now it's just becoming so, I don't know, unstructured. And I just think this is a move in that direction to make it a few more problems for our cute little community, in my opinion.
Thank you, Billy.
But ultimately, it's the state. This is just reacting to state law. Yeah.
Correct.
Moving on to planning and zoning information, Anne?
I just wanted to let the commission know that a new commission member was appointed, I guess, last council meeting, whenever that was, and they should be at the next meeting in January.
Do you know who?
Yeah,
what's the name?
Colette Atkins.
Were we going to approve minutes?
That is coming.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh.
I didn't put the minutes in the agenda. I will do that next meeting.
Well, the minutes were in the agenda. Were there. Yeah,
they were in there?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't put it on the agenda.
No, that's what I said.
So can we...
So you can't approve them. I don't think it's not on the agenda.
Okay.
Okay.
Sorry about that. My mistake.
Would we like to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Second. Yeah. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye.